In a universe that almost is, just out of reach beyond the edge of reality, mysterious forces underlie the fabric of existence. Energemetra 6, the very energy of creation, serves as both the elixir of life and the arsenal of destruction for its human and not-so-human denizens.
Crushing darkness, whose source they cannot fathom, grips the cosmos and its people. In anguish, they dream of the long-foretold bright star.
Join us as we embark on an epic journey, exploring the universe of Energemetra 6.
And we're live, and this is episode 5 of the E6 podcast, and we've got quite a cast today. We've actually got six of us here to read. So there's me, as usual, Jared Michaud. There's Luke and Mel, and PJ Williams is with us. PJ, I'll give you a chance to plug your stuff at the end, and then I've got my oldest and I've got my third here to read other parts today. So welcome, everybody. We're glad to be here. The Energemetra 6 podcast operates on a value-for-value model. That means that we hope if we provide some value to you in your life, that you'll return that to us in whatever way you can manage. If you're interested, head over to e6universe.com and sign up for our email list to get our free ebooks, and hopefully buy a physical book or some merch while you're there. Or if all you can manage right now is to leave us a good review somewhere, 5 stars or some kind of positive rating, that's more than appreciated. Thank you. All right, and with that, we're diving in. This is Bright Star by Jared Michaud, chapter 4. Take it away, PJ.
All right. Chapter 4. And of the Watcher, be certain never to bring artifacts or antiquities within the abyss where its gaze roams, for its unexplained avarice has been the demise of more than one unwary spacer. Mysterious Beings of the Aurora Galaxy, The Authoritative Guide, 5th Edition.
Galton's seriousness was infectious, and all three of them sat attentively as he went on, his deep voice booming.
Now that I've told you of the Skemix and how Paul used the Great Skemix to shape his most powerful creations, I must tell you why I am sharing this knowledge with you. There's a particular aspect of the Skemix that will be of great importance to you three. Any amulet or object of power created by an energemetrist who is fully imprinted with a Skemix may only be used by another energemetrist who shares it. To anyone else, it is no more than a lump of crystal.
His face grew serious.
Some Skemix may be used without imprinting. Many in the Telestry use Skemix without understanding them. They do not claim it as such, but their veneration of Energemetris 6 has become a religion, and the Skemix are the perfect trappings for people who understand practically nothing about them.
His face contracted into a half-sneer.
Even their emblem is an abomination born of a poor understanding of Skemix.
He shook his head and continued.
Imprinting makes a Skemix part of you. You will use it without even knowing you do so. The Great Skemix is different from the others. If you accept it, it will cleanse the traces of any other imprint. You will be able to use your amulet, but you must never choose to imprint another Skemix after.
Rachel frowned.
Why? Will the amulet be destroyed?
Galton shook his head.
I do not believe so. If you imprint another, the Great Skemix within you will be twisted. I do not know what may befall you. It will be evil.
Rachel's frown deepened.
What if someone imprints us without us knowing it, or forces us?
Galton smiled.
That cannot be done. You must be willing. Forced imprints fail, and they rebound upon their maker. Your mind must accept the imprint and meld itself to the pattern.
He paused for a long moment and shook his head as they watched the last of the pattern of light fade slowly away. When their full attention was upon him, Galton said,
"This is a greater decision than you know. You should spend months learning about the Skemics before you make this choice, but our time is short. If you would have my assistance with this, you must decide now."
John didn't hesitate.
"If the great Skemic was good enough for Dad, it's good enough for me."
After a moment, Rachel nodded firmly.
"I agree. I'm in."
Galton nodded back, gravely.
"Be still for a moment. When the pattern reaches out to you, you must accept it."
He turned to Rachel and closed his eyes. After a short pause, a veritable kaleidoscope of colors swirled into being before him, echoing the tracery of lines that had just disappeared, swirling and changing before their eyes. Blinding white blended in facets into every imaginable shade of green, then into a deluge of blues which swallowed up and dominated the other two. The colors formed a great wave which rolled over Rachel. She gasped, and her eyes went wide. She stopped breathing for a moment, then sucked in a deep breath and let it out slowly.
"Oh,"
she said. A moment later, a second identical wave rolled out toward John, flashing through its color changes. He, too, gasped when it touched him, and Galton opened his eyes and smiled.
"I believe it was Paul's hope that you might choose so."
Then Galton's brows drew together and he looked over to Nate, who was sitting calmly to one side.
"I have the same sort of gift for you,"
Galton said. He stopped for a moment, his face inscrutable. Then he said,
"It feels strange that I should imprint the Skemic upon you. Would it not be more fitting if it were the other way around?"
Nate smiled. "You have the key, not I. All things have their moment." Galton nodded, then closed his eyes once more. The same kaleidoscopic array of colors spilled out and rushed over Nate. As the wave approached him, time seemed to slow. In that moment, the colors were the most vibrant experience he'd ever had. They became more than colors, somehow, reaching out into his mind and pulling it into a whirling pattern of the great Skemic, encompassing the entire universe and binding it together, spinning and twisting with all the majestic rhythms of life. As the wave crashed over him, Nate felt as if all the pain and horror that he'd ever experienced were being sluiced away, washed off like the mud he'd played in as a child. He gasped, but unlike the other two, as the wave passed over him, a resounding tone that was half heard and half carried in the whirls of the pattern itself burst out of him. The very fabric of space resonated like a gong as the wave faded. The tone wasn't unpleasant to the ear, but the resonance didn't fade, instead growing louder and louder until everything seemed to reverberate with it. When it seemed the tone could get no stronger, there was a loud crack that was also half sound, half sensation. Afterward, Nate could not have described what happened in precise terms. He would have said that reality itself split open, and a light shone through the hole like sunlight through a window, filling the room where they sat. Except the window had no dimension. Nor could he have reached out and touched it, even though it seemed to be right in front of him. He couldn't even have said where it was. Out of the split came a sound like a great wind or a river over rocks. The rushing could almost have been voices, Nate thought, and he wanted to hear more. If he could just catch what they were saying. But as he listened, something in the sound began to remind him of... He turned away, afraid. Then, as if at a great distance, through the same split in reality, he saw an eye, its pupil a vertical slit, and in that moment it fixed upon him. Its malevolent will filled his mind, and in the brief instant before the window closed, he saw the vertical pupil widen in shock, and was that recognition? Then the window was gone, closed as if it had never been. John and Rachel were both staring at Nate in awe, as if they'd never seen him before. And fleetingly, he wondered what they'd seen. Galton's face, on the other hand, had undergone a transformation from the same wonder John and Rachel's held to pure horror over the course of the last few moments. After a moment, Nate looked questioningly at Galton, then spoke slowly, grasping at something only half remembered. What about the other half? Galton's eyes were still wide in surprise, and he shook his head.
I have knowledge of no more than that. But, Lord Brightstar, the Watcher, it has seen us.
John and Rachel exchanged glances, his worried, hers grim. Nate nodded grimly, but his mouth quirked. Pretty sure it was looking at me, not you. That means it's time for me to go back. What else do we need to do? Galton frowned at Nate for a moment, as if considering, then nodded in return. After a moment, he lifted the pendant from around his neck and looked at it almost wonderingly.
I have carried the Sigil of Mysteries for a millennium. It is the greatest among the amulets that Paul created, and he told me that it was to be yours. I hope it brings you more success than it has offered me.
He handed the object, its crystal no longer glowing, to Nate. Nate nodded and took it carefully, laying it around his own neck where it started to glow once more.
I must also give you this.
While Nate was occupied with the sigil, Galton had reached into his robes and now brought out a folded piece of paper.
It is a letter from Paul Cassisia, written to you before he disappeared. I have rewritten it twice when the paper began to crumble, but its message is faithfully preserved, letter for letter.
Taking the letter from Galton, Nate nodded in appreciation, but didn't speak. His task accomplished, Galton looked somehow at peace. After considering Nate for a time, he asked,
Is there anything else I may do to assist you?
Nate thought for a while, then looked questioningly at Galton. Can you teach them to imprint the schemic on others? He indicated John and Rachel. Galton considered for a moment, then said,
If you wish it, but that will take more time than we have, especially now.
Immediately, Nate looked to John and Rachel. You two stay with him. I'll go with Loredan. Rachel opened her mouth, probably to argue, but Nate shook his head. This is necessary. If I don't go with him, he'll try to follow us, and the Watcher's attention is already on me. I need you to be able to imprint the schemic. Rachel again seemed about to speak, but Galton nodded.
It shall be as you say.
Nate nodded in return. Best leave as soon as I debark, before the pinnace returns to Ocarist. John frowned at Nate.
How will we find you? What will you do?
Nate smiled. I'll find you. Go with the Keeper. As to what I'll do, I think there are others I have to find, too. No time for any of that now, though. Nate's quick goodbye to John and Rachel and the respectful bow from Galton were almost peremptory, but Nate could feel that time was short, so soon enough, he was on his way back to the boat bay. The Energemetra 6 podcast is made possible by North Arrow Coffee. North Arrow Coffee is the pro-life coffee company where 15% of every purchase goes to support organizations like Crisis Pregnancy Centers, whose purpose is to support women in the most difficult situation of their lives. If you're interested, head over to northarrowcoffee.co and use promo code E6 to get 10% off with your order.
The advertisements featured did not necessarily represent my endorsements or views.
And continuing Chapter 4 of Brightstar. When Nate re-entered the pinnace alone, the pilot seemed surprised. Nate nodded to her and said, They'll not be going back with us. The pilot started to reach for her communicator, but Nate shook his head sharply. No comms. Take me back to Ocarist. The pilot's frown deepened, but she nodded once in assent. Nate's nose wrinkled as Ocarist's musk reached him once more, wafting from the pinnace's air circulation system. But he fastened himself in and prepared for the same hurry-up-and-wait he'd endured on the trip over. A few minutes passed in silence before an alarm blared. The pilot swore softly and reached out for a button to kill the audible alarm, though Nate could still see her instrument panel flashing from his seat behind her against a wall.
"Bloody Dominion, where did you come from?"
she muttered, then shook her head, obviously frustrated. A moment later, she lifted her hand to her ear and listened, receiving some sort of signal. Almost immediately, she said,
"No, sir. I have the Bright Star, but..."
She cut off abruptly, then after another moment continued.
"Yes, sir. But, sir, the other two aren't aboard."
The pilot winced and again put her hand to her ear, then said,
"Yes, sir."
She shot a dirty look at Nate, but didn't say anything else for the rest of the trip back to Ocarist, only glancing up occasionally as if to make sure he was still there. Back aboard Ocarist, Nate expected to be left to his own devices. Instead, the pilot followed him off the pinnace and into the airlock. Once it had cycled, she pointed down the corridor.
"We're going that way. I've been instructed to take you to Telestic Lorden."
Nate nodded. "Let's get moving, then." The trip through the labyrinth back to Ocarist's bridge was much the same as before, with his guide giving him suspicious looks every few seconds, but remaining silent, just as she had on the pinnace. Nate was ushered in while she turned away, her job done. Stepping through the hatch, he found Loridan already speaking to someone on the holographic viewer in the center of the room. The figure, presumably a man, was subtly grotesque. At first glance, he seemed normal enough, even plain. His head was hairless, but for a fringe around the edges that he pulled into a long tail behind. He wore a brown uniform and cape, with crossed swords on one shoulder. After staring at him for a long moment, Nate saw something in the set of his face that seemed reminiscent of a lizard. Once he saw it, the impression deepened into the uncanny. His most curious feature by far was his eyes. The pupils were vertical slits cutting all the way up and down the iris, and a chill ran down Nate's spine. Those eyes looked just like the one he had seen when he was imprinted with the schemic. They were like the Watcher's eye. Nate's revulsion was so strong that he almost turned and walked off the bridge. But the hatch had closed behind him, and two burly men in black uniforms were staring at him from either side of it. It was only then that Nate actually registered the conversation between Loridan and the lizard man.
"From 50 light years away, Telestic, it's a miracle you weren't vaporized,"
the man was saying. Loridan was sitting in the captain's chair, giving an impression of reclining at ease, while the captain stood stiffly to one side. Loridan snorted.
"You give me too little credit, Stratigrave Rectus."
"Perhaps,"
the man replied.
"But you've yet to tell me what happened to your guests. Are they still with you?"
For a fraction of a second, Loridan's eyes might have flickered to Nate, who was apparently outside the pickup range of the holographic cameras, but his response showed no hesitation.
"They left with the Keeper. And even if they hadn't, I would never turn them over to you."
Rectus let out a sibilant, grating laugh.
"Only you would be so arrogant as to believe you could keep them from us, Telestic. The Dominion has crushed your Telestry before. Your tenants and your Lightmaker couldn't save you then. Do you really think that has changed? We will have them."
Loridan raised one dark eyebrow.
"You believe you could defeat the Kassizias and the Telestry together? That is a fight you would do well to avoid, Stratigrave. The faith of the Telestry outlasted 5 empires before the Dominion was ever conceived of. It will still be here long after the Dominion is a bad memory."
Rectus' eyes narrowed, and he pointed a skeletal finger at Loridan.
"Cursed odds, always getting in the way. I will inquire with the Keeper. I will find if you are lying. I will pay your Telestry a personal visit. Let your Lightmaker protect you against a true Lightbringer."
An actinic flash blinded everyone on Ocarist's bridge, terminating Rectus' transmission and leaving its audience blinking spots from their vision. After a moment, Loridan turned to regard Nate,
and for a split second, Nate thought Loredan's eyes had the same vertical slit pupils as Stratigrave Rectus's. Then the moment passed, and the rage that distorted his face subsided. Finally, he smiled a crooked smile and said, "It's just as well, I suppose. Excuses work better when they're true." He closed his eyes and put a hand to his forehead in obvious weariness, then looked back up at Nate. "Why did you come back?" Nate smiled slightly in return. "If I hadn't, would you be content to let the Cassizias alone?" Loredan barked a genuine laugh. "Likely not. Why would you wish to separate them from me?" Nate shrugged. "The Keeper has much to teach them. Keeping them from you wasn't the goal." Loredan's lips twisted ironically, but his eyes still held real amusement. "I see. And with that, have you any objection to returning to the Telestry now?" Nate shook his head. "No." He turned to return to his quarters, forestalling any further questions. And that ends Chapter 4 of Brightstar. I do want to have my third read a quick teaser. It is the interval for Part 2.
"She looked like she was asleep, but she wasn't. She was dead. The too small boy, watching from the edge of the crowd, had known her for a little. They'd had a class together, and she always sat in the back, even though she was strong enough that most of the professors wanted her in front. All the students stood well away from where she lay, while the professors were closer, more accustomed to death, perhaps. She was lying in state, they said. That didn't make sense. The only state she was in was dead. He'd seen a dead person once before in the streets before he ever came to Akralukum. The man in the gutter had been old and sick, used up by life. That hadn't been like this. This girl was so much worse. She died of a burnout, used too much power too fast. She was the first he'd seen die that way, pushing too hard to be the best. He could be next. Any of them could. The older students said at least one or two died every year. Breath of air whispered across his face, carrying the new growth smell of spring. All it did was drive home to him how wrong it was for her to die. She looked small and fragile, laying there on the strange bed. Beer, they'd called it, as if that made it special. It was grown-up-sized bed, and she was only 14. She was lying there, dead, and he didn't want to be here. She began to glow then, and as he watched, her body slowly lit up from the inside, the skin of her cheek growing transparent, like shining out of her like the sun coming through a cloud. Silence fell across the gathered students and faculty as the transformation spread until she was as bright as the sun. It was beautiful. It was too much for him. He looked away from the brilliant flash. When he looked back, she was gone. Where her body had been, the intricately embroidered ropes were empty. But her nevita glimmered from where it lay beneath the shroud that had covered her face. He'd seen nevitas, of course, but he'd never seen the lucimorphosis, the transformation. He wondered if Professor Alassine would read the crystal for them and tell of her life. He couldn't imagine what it would be like if he died and they read his nevita. The street boy who somehow sneaked into the school for the powerful and pretended to belong. What would they say? Few of the professors could read nevitas. They usually only did it for famous people like Melius. But sometimes one would pick a student's nevita as a warning,
that a burnout could happen to any of them. His lips formed into a silent snarl. They pushed the students so hard, they didn't have any choice but to burn themselves out anyway. He heard something then, was almost too faint to make out. Stepped closer to where she'd lain, listening intently. It was humming, almost beyond the range of hearing. Nevita was singing. Off to his left, the crowd was moving now. Their murmur of counterpoint to the little crystal's song. He thought it must be the saddest thing he'd ever heard, that song. It was just like her Nevita. All that was left of her life was crying out, pleading with the heavens for injustice of life taken before its time.
Good job. And that concludes the interval for part two of Bright Star. And that's what we were going to be covering today. I sure appreciate everybody coming. Thank you. And boys, thank you for your help. Did a good job. Mel, Luke, thank you both. PJ, how about you tell people what it is you've been up to and what it is you're doing, man?
Yeah, thank you, by the way, Jared, for having me on. This is a lot of fun. I love the work you're doing here. If you don't know me, I'm PJ Williams. I'm the host of a podcast called Real Conspiracies, but it's R-E-E-L, like in movie reel. And Jared joined me recently to cover The Matrix. We got into all the Gnostic symbolism and occult symbolism and hidden messages and meanings inside of The Matrix, and that's what I do. I cover the occult symbolism and hidden messages in movies and video games, and I do that every Tuesday, but I'm also launching a new podcast called Dark Ocean, and that is going to be about all of the mysterious things in the world, conspiracies, cryptids, high strangeness. We're going to get into it with guests and guest co-hosts and covering all kinds of stuff. Doesn't matter if it's, you know, the Templars or the Freemasons or Bigfoot or time travel anomalies, getting into all of it. So that is going to be starting sometime in mid-November, and that is currently my focus, is getting everything ready for that. So there's a lot to do. But that's what I got going on, man. Thank you so much, Jared, for having me on, dude.
So where can people find you if they want to get a hold of your stuff?
Yeah, absolutely. So if you look for Real Conspiracies, it comes up everywhere you listen to podcasts. It's on Rumble. It's on YouTube. Everything is at Real Conspiracies or Real Conspiracies Pod. And then for Dark Ocean, same thing. It's either at Dark Ocean or at Dark Ocean Podcasts. That one's new, so I'm putting everything up, but it's got a YouTube channel. I've converted a YouTube channel that I had before and a Instagram I had before that have a lot of followers, so you'll be able to find those pretty easily. But yeah, anywhere you listen to podcasts, YouTube, Rumble, things like that, Instagram, it should come up, either one of them, pretty easily. So
awesome. Well, and for what it's worth, PJ, and this is to the audience, anybody who's listening, from what everything that PJ's done before, I really love everything that he's worked on, and he does a really great job covering this stuff. I had to choose a while back when I started doing this writing one podcast to listen to in a week, and it ended up being his. So that's my best recommendation that I can make. So I sure appreciate you being here, PJ. Thank you, Luke, for reading Taryn Galton. There will be another opportunity for that. And thank you, Mel, as always, for Rachel and the other stuff. And I think you're going to be doing some of the professors and stuff in the Acrolucum coming up. So stay tuned, everybody. We will catch you next week with Chapter 5 of Bright Star. Thank you. And that's it for this episode.